Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Spiritual Insights. This is Charlotte Spicer. We are so excited that you are joining us today as we kick off the first in our monthly series with guest co-host Robert Rosenthal, MD. A Course in Miracles segments will broadcast weekly at 3 p.m. Eastern and on the second Thursday of each month. Dr. Rosenthal will join me to discuss all things A Course in Miracles as well as his book, From Plagues to Miracles. So you'll want to mark your calendars. If your life is plagued with drama, upset, miscreations, this series of segments will help you reach the promised land of peace and unity. Through the loving, precise guidance of A Course in Miracles, combined with the brilliant blending of insights offered in his book, From Plagues to Miracles, The Transformational Journey of Exodus, From the Slavery of Ego to the Promised Land of Spirit, our audience will be inspired to grow into the true expressions of themselves and relinquish the untruths that deny us our natural inheritance. You're invited to partake of these segments no matter where you are on your path. And all participants are encouraged to read From Plagues to Miracles to deepen their understanding of the workings of the ego as presented by Dr. Bob, which that's what we will affectionately call him, Dr. Bob, from a variety of enlightening perspectives. So please share these segments with your fellow students of the course. And today we'll begin with the topic of miracles and the role they play in our paths. Well, here we are, Dr. Bob, taking our next step in this amazing journey, huh?
Indeed, and I'm just fine with Dr. Bob. A lot of people call me that, so let's make it official.
Okay, and it'll be good for the future when we get our own TV show, I think.
I like that.
I know, I'm a futuristic thinker. So anyway, welcome and thanks for joining as co-host, and I think we're going to put a wonderful series together for everybody. There's so much to share, and to be able to share your insights as a professional psychotherapist, all the things that you do, and your, of course, your long history with the course, having been there in the beginning when it was published and being friends with Dr. Thetford and the whole inner circle. So I'm sure it will be rich, rich in content. Don't you feel good about it?
Yeah, I'm sure this is guided. And for everyone listening, I do trust that you will come away with something valuable. And, of course, there will be time for people to call in and ask questions, which I welcome. Sometimes if you have a question that you might think is a little strange or a little too personal, what you don't realize is that there are 100 other people out there all with some variant of the same issue or the same question, and that you open the door for spirit to come through with an answer or a miracle to manifest simply by being willing to put forward your question.
Yes, I agree. What I'd like to add to that, Dr. Bob, is that, you know, some people might feel shy or if you have trouble formulating a question in your mind, like you know there's something, what you can also do, because Dr. Bob and I, having a solid history as student teachers of the course, we're pretty connected to each other and to spirit. So if you would like to offer your question up in a prayer, then whatever is appropriate to come out of our mouths will come out. And that's the way I find in my classes that I don't know why I'm saying something. I just know I need to say it. Have you experienced this, Bob, where, and it turns
Absolutely.
Out you're answering the question? So that we can use the truth that we are all connected in, you know, in our favor, and don't worry about asking the wrong question, like Dr. Bob said. So, oh, good. I'm glad we got that out of the way. I really wanted to touch on that, so I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, no, I've experienced that both as a speaker and as someone in an audience with a burning question and, you know, putting it in the form of a prayer, setting an intention, and getting, you know, the perfect answer without ever having to raise my hand.
It's a beautiful process, so yes. And so let's get into the whole topic of miracles.
Yes.
With regard to From Plagues to Miracles, how do you describe your book is largely about the book of Exodus from the Bible, and you state that, you know, when you read Exodus from a different perspective, what you find there is a handbook for transformational change. And how do miracles pertain to that handbook for change?
That is exactly the key question. So I come to the book of Exodus through A Course in Miracles. You know, I've been working with A Course in Miracles quite consistently with a few significant breaks since I was 20 years old, and I'm 58 now, so that's quite a few years. And therefore, A Course in Miracles really forms the bedrock for my spiritual system, for my daily practice, for how I view the work I do and how I view the world, even though many, many people who know me have no clue that that's even in my background, which is just fine by me. But when I took a look at the book of Exodus through the lens of A Course in Miracles, what became clearer to me was that Exodus lays out this lovely roadmap that's, you know, got miracles as signposts all through it. And at this point, Shar, I think about Exodus as kind of the first Course in Miracles. I don't think it's quite as eloquent or as adaptable today as A Course in Miracles.
Mm-hmm.
But when we read Exodus, looking specifically at, well, what are those miracles and what are they doing, seeing the characters of Exodus as us. Pharaoh is us. Moses is us. The Hebrews are us. That they're all parts of our inner being, and the Hebrews in particular being sort of pulled between slavery under Pharaoh and freedom under Moses. When we identify with them, we begin to understand in a much deeper way how miracles come into our lives. To me, that's the relationship.
Okay.
Between the two books. Now,
yes.
For most people, miracles, by definition in their heads, are these big, extraordinary events that have no basis in fact or reality. Many people, quote unquote, don't believe in miracles, and see religious folks who do believe in miracles as being, you know, gullible at best and perhaps, you know, susceptible to their own very personal interpretations of events.
Mm-hmm.
But in point of fact, both Exodus and A Course in Miracles, I think, take us to a very, very different understanding of what a miracle is. And you and I both know one of the earliest principles of miracles in the text of A Course in Miracles states that miracles are natural. When they do not occur, something has gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a pretty radical statement for a reality that most of us subscribe to that says, no, miracles are the exception, not the rule. You know, when a miracle happens, wow, we all pay notice, but the rest of our lives, that's ruled by planning, by control, by,
mm-hmm.
you know, making things happen. And so that line, and I'm going to say it again because that's how important I think it is, miracles are natural. When they do not occur, something has gone wrong. It turns our entire sense of reality on its head. And if A Course in Miracles is correct, which I have no doubt, turning it on its head actually turns it right side up. We're
yeah.
the ones who are upside down.
It's,
so a miracle
that belief,
becomes the normal. I'm sorry, go
yeah,
ahead.
That's the belief that miracles are the exception to the rule is an inversion of the truth. So when
yeah,
you take that
exactly.
equation, turn at 180, then they're normal, and something going wrong, that's the exception to the rule.
Exactly. And notice, in all of our lives, how often are things going wrong? Well, pretty much a lot of the time, which simply means that we're not yet practiced in accessing our miracle mind, what the Course would call our connection to Holy Spirit, or what I think the Book of Exodus symbolizes in the character of Moses, and what I like to refer to as the Moses mind. So if we're not able to access that part of our mind, then, you know, we kind of run around like crazy people in a darkened room, not knowing what we're doing or where we're going, and we end up bumping into a lot of sharp edges as a result. We don't know how to access that guidance.
Right.
So if we start right off with this understanding, then if miracles are natural, let's take a look at, well, what's not natural? And this gets... This, again, feels pretty radical. Well, making plans isn't natural. Saving up for retirement isn't natural. Figuring out what you need to do when isn't natural. A to-do list isn't natural. And yet, we all do all these things. I mean, every one of those, raise my hand, I'm doing it. But I don't think A Course in Miracles is telling us we have to stop doing that. What the Course is trying to reflect to us is that we do those things out of fear. We believe that terrible things can happen because we've seen them all around us. And, you know, and in this day and age, the media is a drumbeat of fear. I mean, turn on TV or the Internet, and there's no doubt there are way more stories, you know. My internet provider, which happens to be AOL, you know, every time I turn it on, there's a story of some missing child or someone who's killed someone else. The drumbeat of fear, it's everywhere. So when we open to the idea that there's another way to go about life, even just recognizing that, yeah, that would be nice, that would be really different, I would like that, let me set an intention for that. By setting that intention, we open a door through which miracles can come through, and then the miracle, in a sense, becomes confirmation, but the miracle itself is almost a sideshow. The really important thing is that we've aligned with Spirit, and in doing so, we've identified with, we think of ourselves no longer as just an ego mind that's talking nonstop in our heads in a physical body that's frail and going to get sick and die someday. No, we are now spirit. You know, we're spiritual beings having a physical experience. And I think, you know, cutting right to the chase, that is the ultimate goal of miracles. It's not, gee, let me get as much cool stuff as I can. It's not about how do I learn to manifest what I want. At the deepest level, it's a recognition that your ego mind, the you that you identify with, doesn't really know what you want. And we'll come back to this for sure in a little bit. But that there is another part of our mind that very much knows what we want. Peace, freedom, joy, happiness. And that these states of mind are not dependent on what's going on in our life. They're primary. When we get there, then the rest of our lives will work. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense because, you know, miracles come from Source, and it is our function to facilitate miracles and be connected to Source at all times. I know in the busyness of our lives, it can often be difficult to have that state of grace present in all times or be in our Moses mind. But if we know how to get there and we build that muscle and stay there as often as possible, when we do exit that state of grace and wind up in the ego mind, then as soon as we recognize we're doing that, then the quicker we can let that go, it can get back to the Moses mind, the Christ minor, our right mind, and the longer you can stay there. So it's not that we can't do this. It just takes, I think, a lot of patience with yourself, clear sight in examining your thoughts and the thoughts that produce the emotions that you're feeling, and just knowing that these things are down here. My job is to go within my heart and connect to Source and say, you do this. And that's when miracles occur, and our lives flow right behind that intention. That is the source of the river. And then everything flows, just like you said.
Well, you used a great term. You said building muscles. And anyone who's ever worked out or even just, you know, gotten fit by running or walking a distance knows that when you first start, your muscles aren't conditioned. Anyone who's ever tried to take up a sport like tennis or golf, you know, the first time you pick up that club or that racket, boy, you know, that ball does not go where you think you'd like it to go. We have to practice. And the more we practice, the better we get at it. And the better we get at it, the more feedback we get, and we're able to refine what we're doing. So, you know, it's like that old joke, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice this.
Yeah.
We're building those muscles. And, as you also said, what we're actually practicing is not anything that we have to do. And here again, you know, this is very radical. I use that word a lot, radical, because I think that we need to recognize the thought system that we use every day is upside down. It's guaranteed to bring us suffering. I mean, after all, this was the Buddha's great insight, life is dukkha, suffering. But it's that way because we're coming at it, you know, with the wrong operating system. So, again, if we can make this radical transformation and say, oh, what I'm practicing is not doing something, but undoing. What I'm practicing is getting out of the way and recognizing there is something in my mind and in your mind, Char, and in every one of the listeners, and in everyone who those listeners or listeners know, every single human being and animal on the planet has within their minds this direct access channel to that which is greater than us, but that which is us, and it's all one. And when we access that, you know, it's kind of like whatever we need will come through. You know, and that becomes the miracle.
That is the miracle, and I love what you said, Hal, don't practice doing, practice undoing. And so with that thought, I'd like to segue briefly into the lessons of A Course in Miracles as miracles, because what I experienced when I did the lessons, first I had shifts in awareness, then I had physical sensations, then when I sat and contemplated it, I realized when we do the lessons of A Course in Miracles, it breaks you out of the time continuum.
Yes.
So that the lessons themselves are miracles in that you rise above this illusory world and briefly connect with your higher mind, the Moses mind, and then as you practice, and then let that go and continue, and then do your next set as the instructions, however many they say to do, and then pick it up again the next day. Those lessons are miracles in themselves. They are the process of undoing the mind that is creating the mess that we now want to reject as our lives.
Yes.
Did you experience that?
Yes, and I continue to experience it every year as I go through the workbook again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do believe one of the unique features of A Course in Miracles is that in addition to a 600-plus page text, which is very abstract in places, and especially for first-timers can be extremely tough to understand, precisely because we're living in an upside-down world, the Course also has a workbook, and that workbook has a lesson for every day. And the purpose of those lessons, just as you said, is to instill in us practice, to give us very specific ways to think about who we are, what's happening, to give us a pause point in our day.
Mm-hmm.
The earliest lessons seem fairly simple. I think the first couple, you know, we're only asked to to stop and do the lesson for like 2 minutes in the morning and 2 minutes in the evening. And at that point, I remember the first time I got the course, I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I think I can handle this. Of course, by the time you get to lesson 90, you're being asked to take the first 5 minutes of every hour and use that for the lesson. Use that to align with spirit. And boy, watch the resistance come up there. This is stupid. How can they expect us to do this? You know, this nobody could do this. And even still, the course makes it very clear. If you're not able to stop, to tune out, you know, if you're in the middle of a business luncheon with an important client, no, it probably doesn't make sense to say, could you hold the line for 5 minutes here? I'm going to close my eyes and do my Course in Miracles lesson. It says just acknowledge what the lesson is in your head. We're training ourselves to shift from ego consciousness and, to use a computer metaphor, the operating system of ego, which we all learn from birth, and if you subscribe to reincarnation, we learned it well before our birth in this lifetime. We're switching from that to a much more elegant operating system. So the course's workbook lessons, they go after reality, you know, right from the get-go. Nothing I see in this room means anything. I have given everything I see in this room all the meaning that it has for me, et cetera. But yes, these are the repetitions. You know, if you're used to doing weightlifting, you got to do a certain number of reps. Well, the workbook lessons are a great way to do reps, and they'll keep you honest. And, you know, if you don't do one for a day, no, you know, God's not going to punish you. You won't go to hell. It's not a sin. It just means that you noticed that day you probably weren't as peaceful. You didn't have that resource available to you.
Right.
At this point on my spiritual journey, I noticed that when I allow myself to align and go into that flow, often through a workbook lesson, the day is just better. You know, I come up with things to say that feel on target. I'm in the right place at the right time without trying. Things that could have gone wrong when I look at them in retrospect just happened to go right. You know, I made a turn and took a different way to work and then discovered when I drove home that the road was under construction and I missed it and didn't even know I missed it. That's kind of how this all operates. But again, not because we're special. This is not about specialness. This operating system of spirit is open to everyone and anyone. All it takes is an intention to do it differently. As the Course says somewhere, nobody's tolerance for pain will go on forever, and at some point we all come to a place of saying there must be a better way. A Course in Miracles offers it. I think the Book of Exodus, as I describe it in From Plagues to Miracles, also offers it and gives a model for how that works.
Absolutely. That was beautiful. I just, you know, I want to point out, if anyone listening is new to A Course in Miracles, doesn't know what it is, or is only has a vague familiarity with it, like that you might know the name, but you've never touched the pages, it is Christian in statement, but it's universal in its application. So no matter what religion you subscribe to, these lessons can help you free your mind of the ego. And it says in the introduction, to the workbook, the 365 lessons for each day, it doesn't mean you have to cram that into a year like Dr. Bob said. You can also take a particular lesson that you're enjoying and spread it out over 2 or 3 days. That's fine. It's in the introduction. But what it says is that in doing the exercises, it makes the goal of the course possible. And the goal of the course is to undo the wrong thinking that miscreates what we experience as discord, disharmony, unhappiness, depression. I used to be a severe depression sufferer, and not anymore after having done this, because I understand my mind now, and I got to know so much more about myself and the way I trip myself up, so that in doing the lessons, again, there's another byproduct of doing the lessons helps you digest the text, because your mind is more open. And like you, I loved your examples, but, you know, maybe taking a turn you didn't expect to and come to find out you made it to work on time and didn't get stuck behind some construction. And this is the way that works. These are little gaps in time where we connect with God. We connect with Source. and at the same time release the past, exercise that muscle of being in our right mind, and your life will change. And I love lesson 5. I'm never upset for the reason I think. And what I found is no matter what presents itself in front of me, that is the first thing I say, whether I'm angry, sad, humiliated, doesn't matter. There's only love and there's only fear. Those are the only two emotions. But there are varying shades of gray under the title of fear. But no matter what happens, if it is displeasurable to me, I will say I'm never upset for the reason I think. And then I go right into I can see peace instead of this. And then I'll just open up and say, tell me what I need to do. Tell me what I need to say. You take this because I don't know with my little mind. And it works out. Arguments smooth out. Communication is established. Accidents are averted. All of it. All that happens. And
yeah. No, exactly. At bottom, the only reason that we're upset is because we're using the ego mind. And if we're using the ego mind, fear is inevitable. Shame is inevitable. A sense of inferiority is inevitable.
Blame
is inevitable. Sadness is inevitable. Anger is inevitable. The purpose is to shift out of the ego mind. Now, I think this is, in terms of looking at how miracles show up, this is where the book of Exodus can give us a nice mirror for looking at what miracles do on our spiritual path. And I think one of the things that, well, first of all, A Course in Miracles says there is no order of difficulty in miracles,
yeah.
Meaning that there is no obstacle that we can come up with that can't be solved by switching to this other operating system and letting go and letting God and turning it over to Spirit, as you're talking about. But where I think Exodus is particularly helpful here is that, okay, I'm upset and I need to make a switch. Well, if we think about, in Exodus, the Pharaoh, the agent of slavery, and Moses, the agent of freedom, as both being elements of our mind, aspects of our mind, then when we're running ego, when we're running Pharaoh, we are going to get plagues. Plagues are the inevitable result of that, of using the ego mind. And the more we dig in and resist, the more obstinate we get, make that happen, come hell or high water. The more we try to force it, the bigger those plagues get. But the plagues aren't there to punish us. It's not, oh, you're bad. I mean, it truly is just a very elegant feedback system. You know, you use a bad operating system on your computer, you're going to get bad results. You shift to a good operating system, get a patch that controls that computer virus, suddenly you're getting the right results. So when we're upset, coming back to the lesson in the course that you were describing, I'm never upset for the reason I think. When I'm upset, it's because I'm hostage to Pharaoh, I'm enslaved, and I'm thinking that's the only thing that there is. The moment that I recognize my plagues as an opportunity to shift to Spirit, now, figuratively speaking, the Red Sea can part. We can move ahead on our journey. Whatever that plague was, whatever that obstacle is, we allow Spirit to remove it for us. One place that is in Course in Miracles where you see exactly this process, and I think it is probably the most spiritual system of thought that's been in our culture since the 1930s, is Alcoholics Anonymous and all the 12-step programs that spun off around it. Because what do they tell you? You know, you're not in control. You have to recognize that you're not and turn it over to God or God as you understand God or a higher power. And following those 12 steps, you will arrive at the same place. You're shifting from an egoic, Pharaoh-like operating system that if you're an alcoholic is going to keep you drinking, if you're an overeater is going to keep you overeating, if you're a spending addict is going to keep you shopping and being in debt. You're going to shift from that to a mindset that says, again, to quote the course lesson, I could see peace instead of this. Because that addictive behavior coming out of Pharaoh and ego it'll never satisfy you. You can, you know, no matter what, you can do it till the day you die. You're not going to be satisfied. It's not going to bring peace. Peace comes from an alignment with spirit.
Yes, and I've never heard it quite explained that way. That was very interesting to hear. But the key word that you just said is you're never going to be satisfied. And when you said that, it was like an illuminating thought that, well, then that's at the foundation of addiction in a yogic perspective, because I was heavily in the yogic community. My only understanding of addiction is that, because I'm certainly not qualified to even talk about it, but I do know this, is that it's a matter of quality, not quantity. And when you are fully engaged in something that you're doing, be it an activity or eating or any of life's pleasurable activities, when you've had enough, you're okay with that. And when you're not okay with that and you want more and more and more and more, that's where you're in the ego, and that's what rang to mind when you said satisfaction. You are satisfied with the experience as it was and move on to the next. And that might be a shower and then go to bed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But you're okay. Well, this was enjoyable. I appreciated this. Now I'm going to move on. You're not stuck in. If I don't get more, I might never get any ever again. That could, like,
well, what,
people who eat chocolate or something like that.
Well, yeah. If you need more, then what purpose is it really serving? I mean, if you have to keep doing it over and over and over again in some compulsive way, then you're using it as a counterweight, a counterbalance to try to, you know, make something feel different. You know, I'm not having a good day, so I will eat chocolate. Through the chocolate, I'm gonna shoehorn my way into feeling good here. I'm going to do something, you know, quote-unquote good for myself. But that's the problem with addiction, is it never acknowledges the underlying fear, the underlying shame, you know, the underlying negative emotion. And until we acknowledge that and from that place recognize that as egos, we're powerless to do anything about it. We're powerless because ego creates that. You know, the ego mind creates the suffering, the dukkha, the addiction. So how can the ego mind undo what it's designed to create? But once we tap down into, okay, I'm afraid of this. All right, that's honest. That's genuine. You're afraid. Well, what would you like in place of that fear? What would you rather feel? And the answer to that is usually not chocolate or I want to go to Las Vegas and gamble and make a whole lot more money. The answer to that is, I'd like peace. I'd like the fear removed. And the next step from that, well, how do I do that? I could see peace instead of this. I make the decision to align, with the Moses mind, with the Holy Spirit, with the Christ mind, with my true self, with my true self. These entities are not floating out there in some heaven outside of us. They are us. They are much more our reality, capital R, than the little self that we trot through life every day can ever be. And it's there within us all the time. The kingdom of heaven lies within. Couldn't be said any more straightforwardly than that.
No, you can't. And that was beautiful. I mean, you know, I love this topic. I just get so filled with energy. But I thought what we could do is answer some of the questions that I put in the post that I put. And people might be coming to us through Facebook or Twitter, Google+. I'm all out there. But what I put in there is that let's start with if anybody is listening and has the book within reach, I am at Chapter 1, The Meaning of Miracles, and just to touch on a few of the principles, because in a lot of our minds, you know, the ego is going to tell us, look, they have a better car than you. You're not worthy. Or why can't I get a promotion? Why am I always passed over? All the tapes that keep playing over and over in our minds, that's what we want to break out of. But I think first we need to understand the nature of miracles. And one of the first ones, that is, the order of difficulties is number one. One is not harder or bigger than another. They are all the same, and all expressions of love are maximal. And what that's saying is it takes the same amount of energy to create a miracle that to the ego seems spectacular as it does to create a miracle that seems like kind of small, but quite appreciated. There is no difference in size.
But small by our ego.
The ego deals in comparison. That is its root. That is its function. It's comparison. I'm big, you're small. I'm smart, you're dumb.
Yes.
You're rich, I'm poor. And that's the root of all evil. And that's where we get into trouble. If you've ever worked in an office, and then some of the nightmare scenarios that can take place. I call the battlefield of the office a platform for forgiveness, because you're going to start forgiving on day one. Anyway, that's like a whole topic for another segment that I'm planning. But I learned at 19, somebody asked me what I made, and foolishly, I didn't know. I told them, and that person hated me ever since, because I was making maybe 50 cents an hour more than they were. So that taught me, do not tell people what you make. Do not be ostentatious in your earning. You know, just don't have everything hanging out on your sleeve, because people are going to compare, and if they make more than you, they'll gloat, and if they make less, they're going to maybe be very angry with you. Have you seen a lot of that?
Well, I think you nailed it when you said, you know, the ego lives by comparison. You know, the one that I get in my office all the time is kind of on the other end of that. Well, you know, what right do I have to, you know, feel bad that, you know, that my daughter is ill, or that my son is having trouble in school, or that, you know, that younger guy got the promotion at the office, you know, because there are people with cancer, and there are people, you know, who are in countries where they're being tortured. So I have no right to my suffering. I mean, or whether you go on the positive end and you're looking at the movie stars and, you know, the multi-billionaires and going, wow, you know, I wish I had what they had. Mm-hmm. Either way, it's comparison. The ego does live by comparison, because the ego is based on fear, and therefore it's always trying to figure out, how do I make myself better? The ego is a constant self-improvement project that will never cross the finish line, because no matter what you do for yourself, you will always be able to look out there and find someone who's still richer, prettier, better at that sport, et cetera. My grandfather, who was a very wise man, told me when I was a teenager, he said, you know, with money, there's always going to be someone with more. There's always someone who can run faster than you. You know, choose what you want to do based on its meaning for you, not based on comparisons with others. But so therefore, if we get back to that first principle that there is no order of difficulty in miracles, what that's really telling us is, you know, stop with the comparison. Every miracle, think of it this way, every miracle is an intrusion of love into the gulag, the prison camp of fear and pain that we live in every day. And the reason why they're all equal is, let me give you another way to think about it. If you're having a bad dream, that's very mild. You know, you're supposed to meet someone and they're not there and they're late and you're kind of irritable in the dream. Or you're having a first-class nightmare where you're being pursued by, you know, Nazis with giant swords and they're going to cut you into little pieces. What's the remedy for those fears in the dream? Wake up. And when you wake up, it doesn't matter whether you're waking up from a first-class nightmare or from, you know, just a mild irritation. It's a dream either way. So when miracles enter our world, they're entering a dream world, and therefore, you know, they're going to be suited. They're going to be matched to whatever's going on in our lives. And if we're having, you know, a first-class nightmare, if we're having, in Exodus, a Pharaoh-like 10th plague, then the miracle might appear to be commensurately big like that. If we're just having kind of a ratty day, maybe the miracle is that, you know, the clerk in the store looked at you and smiled. And in that moment, you let go of all of that tension. And those two miracles are the same.
Absolutely the same.
From the perspective of spirit. Yeah.
Beautiful
One
example.
One is not harder or bigger than another.
Nothing makes me happier than the kindness of a stranger when they look into my eyes and smile at me and I feel love.
Yes.
I can feel it coming from them. And I want to point out that, you know, when our minds work this way, and it happens to all of us, if you're inhabiting a human body, you have an ego, and it's going to be operating. It doesn't, it does shut down while you're sleeping, but it's always going to work. And you reminded me of one of my favorite quotes from the book that I tell myself all the time, because I have a tendency to get what I want and then look for something more. It's like taking your contentment, throwing it out the window, and saying, no, I want something better. And the quote is this: the ego will forever have you chasing what it does not want you to find. What you're looking for is safety and peace and stability. So then it says, you know those little lasers people play with cats with and they shine it on the wall?
Yes.
And I see the ego as, look, that job will make you happy. So you chase after the job, or you go to school for 4 years, spend a lot of money to get a degree so you can get that job. Like someone going to law school, and the second year into practicing law, they decide, this doesn't make me happy. And you go through that tailspin of, but I thought this would make me happy, I worked so hard. And then the ego says, no, look over there. That will make you happy, and this. And so it has us chasing. It's especially, I like to bring this up, in respect to romantic relationships.
Oh, yeah.
Many people call me to ask me, when am I going to get my next relationship? And I always tell them, I will not answer that question, because what you're really asking me is, when will someone come along to save you from yourself?
Precisely.
So I won't answer that question for clients. I'd rather dig into the relationships they've had that are past and get to the core of what went wrong there. But anyway, so I like to repeat to myself, the ego will forever have you chasing what it does not want you to find, as an understanding, as a tool of understanding why we keep beating ourselves over the head. It's like hitting ourselves in the head with a hammer because it feels good when you stop.
Yeah, I mean,
have you ever heard that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the ego is hitting yourself over the head with a hammer. I think, you know, to take exactly what you're saying and just shine a light on it in a different way, the ego only knows happiness situated in the future, and that, which, if you think about it, is a very profound statement, because it means you can never be happy. The moment you embody happiness in the present tense, you are in the moment, and if you're in the moment, ego doesn't know what to do with that. Ego is all about using the past to formulate the future. Well, you know, I had that boyfriend, and he didn't work out, so next time, you know, I'm not going to get married to a golfer. I want someone who's, you know, whatever. So the ego is always skipping over the present, which is really the only thing we have. I mean, we all inhabit the present all the time. I mean, that's all there is. And yet the ego has done this very crafty little bait and switch and tells us, no, just over the next hill, that's where happiness lies. And then you get over that next hill, and it's like, well, no, you know, one more hill. Not this one, the next one. I mean, I have in my career worked with, you know, some very, very wealthy clients and many who are much less so. For everyone, the world of money, it is a trap. And I'm not saying get rid of your money or money is the root of all evil, although it does give rise to comparison. All I'm saying is that in the world of money, whatever you have brings you to a place where you can see what you don't have, and now you're chasing after the next thing and the next thing. And I'm sure that, you know, the people with $10 million are thinking, you know, if I had 15, I'd be better off. And those with 15 are going, I really need 30 or 40, and then I can get the jet I want. But in the moment, the ego cannot bring happiness. It situates it in the future. So, litmus test. If you're thinking, well, I'm not happy now, but when I do thus and such, I will be, red flag, you're operating an ego's operating system. And I think this is one of the reasons why it's harder sometimes for younger people, you know, adolescents, young 20s, to really fully embrace a spiritual path. Obviously not universally true, but at that age, it really does look like the world is my oyster and all I have to do is work for this or that and it's all going to come to me. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, you get a few more decades under your belt and you realize, no, that just isn't the case. And it's not because you're unlucky. It just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and it's not because you're not worthy, because life is not about deserving and it's not about fairness. But everyone deserves a miracle. That is our inherent right given to us by the Creator. You are worthy of miracles, and you need to believe that first before you can really start to see them in your lives, because they're there. We just don't recognize them, and this teaches you how to recognize them.
Yes.
And as far as, you know, oh, I'll be happy when I lose weight, when I get a new car, when, that's the ego's use of time. It takes the past, grabs a chunk of it, and throws it over your head into the future. And you're in this endless cycle of, you know, one of my favorite visuals is a lot of times what we do is we examine the past and sift through the debris, and we think that we see our future and its remains, and that is simply not so. We simply stand in the present and say, that can no longer harm me. It is, as soon as it's over, it's rendered an illusion. And I know many will have a knee-jerk reaction, but what about in the cases of rape and murder? And I hear you and I feel you, but I want to keep it simple. Because we do,
well,
you know,
but you know
that,
what? I mean, I've worked with people who've had to deal with rape. I've worked with victims of child abuse that would turn your hair white. And, no, we're not excusing that, but in the fullness of time, as they not get stuck in those feelings but work them through,
right,
they achieve freedom. And when they achieve freedom, they're not looking back and going, well, you know, I was, you know, my stepfather raped me, or, you know, my brother tried to kill me every Friday night. No, when they're done with it, they're done with it, and they move on.
And when it's complete, you know it. There's no
yes.
more layers. You really do. And then you can create from the point where you're standing the life that you desire. And what you desire is what you deserve. So that's this kind of tricky back loop, but first there's desire, and then you have to realign your thoughts with the Creator, because to know God's will is to know your own, and we need to understand these concepts.
Well, precisely. And
from there we go.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, and from there, that's the first step when you step on a spiritual path, whether you study A Course in Miracles or not, that's fine, but all of, like I said, all these things are universal, and all miracles mean life, and God is the giver of life. And once you open your mind, His voice will direct you very specifically, and that's what we all aspire to do here.
Yes, yes. You know, I one of the things that I very much wanted to get to in our program today is
uh-huh.
that there are so many authors, inspirational speakers, I would call them, you know, technologies for manifestation, the most prominent and best known being The Secret, that are, you know, the culture is just rife with them. And I would never criticize something like that, because I think that as an initial stage of waking up to say you are not the victim of the world you see, you can shift the world you see by your thoughts. Your thoughts give rise to the world you see. We take that first step onto the spiritual path. But if you get stuck at that stage and think that life is just about, manifesting the cool stuff, and when you have some cool stuff and the house is, that, you know, the house, the vacation house you want at Tahoe or the Hamptons, and the perfect maid and the perfect car and all of that, if that's as far as you get, I mean, again, I don't want to make judgments, but that isn't where happiness comes from. That's
no.
just a demonstration that thoughts are powerful, and that the world we see is the result of our thoughts, of our mind. To me, in the book of Exodus, this is what I call the burning bush phase. You know, Moses is living a normal kind of life up in, you know, shepherding his father-in-law's flocks, and he's far from Egypt, and he's not thinking about, you know, gee, how do I help my people achieve freedom? You know, he's sort of let it all go. You know, he's got his job, he's got his wife, he's got his kids, he's satisfied. But the spiritual path won't leave us there, and so Moses stumbles into this burning bush. Well, what does the burning bush do? It wakes him up to the fact that there is more to life, that the life he's leading, it's not just that it's incomplete, it's an incomplete description. And the moment he wakes up to it, it gives him guidance. No, your job is to free yourself. In Exodus, his job is to free his people. But if we think of Moses as part of the mind, then that wake-up call is to free ourselves. So once we realize, okay, thought creates the world we see, and if I you know, I've manifested a car, you know, I've seen some pretty amazing miracles take place at that manifestation level. But from where I am now, and every once in a while I'll still drop into it and go, oh, let me go buy a lottery ticket, even though I know, you know, I the money's better spent on a hot fudge sundae. At a certain stage, it's no longer about the stuff. You know how it works. Now it's about moving forward on the spiritual path. Now it's about digging into those really tough places in our lives where we get really mired, the difficult relationships, the things that don't seem to be working. And ultimately, it is about, you know, being in miracle-mindedness all the time. I mean, that is the promised land. I think that is enlightenment. A Course in Miracles says enlightenment is just a shift in perception. You know, that's all we're being asked to do. On the other hand, since the perception we have is heavily ego-based, that shift is a very big deal. And when you start seeing the world through what the Course would call Christ's vision, through the eyes of miracle-mindedness, it really does look different. You're not seeing bodies. I mean, they're there, but you're recognizing that that body, you know, it's, I don't know, it's like a monopoly piece on the board. It has nothing to do with the deeper reality of love that lives and breathes and operates behind each physical body and each one of our seeming little identities. So manifestation is fine. You know, go do the secret and but see it not as, once I get that stuff, I can be happy. See it as, oh, I create this world, therefore I can take happiness as an internal state and ultimately recognize that the only true happiness is inner peace, which comes from identifying with spirit, identifying with that which is not ego rather than ego-mindedness. So that's the end of that, of my sermon there for today, but I really wanted to make that point. If you're new to the spiritual path, that's fine. You know, by all means, practice manifestation. You know, get the secret, get E squared. You know, listen to Wayne Dyer. This is all great stuff. But at a certain point, you know, it's kind of like saying, you know, I was a great student in fourth grade, and I want to just keep doing fourth grade. No, at some point, you got to move on to bigger challenges, which doesn't mean dropping into pain. It just means realizing that at the deepest level, as you know, fragmented beings living in bodies, we don't know what we want. We don't know what's going to make us happy. Only spirit knows that. And time and again, you know, I've run into people who think that they're on a path to happiness, like that law student you were talking about who gets to second year of practice and goes, what am I doing? And that's a great example. I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of three or four people that I've worked with or know who've dropped out of law school or become lawyers and then ditched it to go do something completely different. You know, at a certain point, we realize that what the ego told us would make us happy, whether it's a job, a relationship, you know, a number of digits in our checking account, whatever it is, that's not going to be it. You know, that there really is a better way.
Yes, and consider, too, that makes perfect sense. And consider, too, we're not here to do just one thing. You know, and you went to medical school. You thought you were going to be a doctor. Then your perception changed and said, no, I think the study of the mind is, it feels better for me. And you were right, and you listened to that guidance, and that's what you did. But...
Well, actually, for me, I knew I wanted to study the mind, but I thought that getting the MD was the best way to get there. But that's because I was already a student of A Course in Miracles when I applied to medical school.
But okay.
I'm the exception, so your basic point is absolutely correct.
Yes, and there was one thing I wanted to say, and that was, you know, we were created in the image of the Creator with the ability to create. Manifesting is great. But by the time A Course in Miracles finds you, as you were saying, you know, when you're tired of the pain, or maybe I just want to experience more pain before I stop this, like I said about the hammer. You do the same things over and over, you hit the same brick wall, and then eventually you say, why am I doing this? Okay, good. So if you're at that point in your life and you're listening now, perfect. Then you're primed for this, because the Course in Miracles will find you when you're ready and ready to let go of the pain, and now you have plenty of material to work with. No matter how many decades you've invested in your life, if it finds you, you've got the material to work with, and you can get started, and you can achieve so many more results than merely going out. And there, like you said, there's a lot of good information out there. And I love Wayne Dyer. I just like listening to his voice. It's great
he's
reminders
a great
of what I already understand.
Yeah.
But go play. Play with, metaphysical stuff or whatever you want to do. But the main goal is to get to a place of inner peace. And what most of us really want isn't independence. We want someone to tell us what to do that's foolproof and will bring us happiness. And the only one who can do that is your inner teacher. And that's the entire goal of this book, is to get you in touch with your inner teacher so that you will never have to be afraid again. And I've learned in my 12 years of study, I never, for the rest of my life, have to make another decision for myself. I will ask each time, and every time I do, the answer is always right.
Yes.
That's the end of my sermon.
This is where, yay.
Yay.
I mean, again,
what
this
does that
is
mean? Yay, she's quiet.
This is where we see the topsy-turvy nature of the world, because from our ego perspective, the idea that we don't know and that our judgment is faulty and that we have to ask feels like an abdication. It feels like we're relinquishing, our control. In point of and that independence, yes, I'm going to make of the world what I want is the way to go. But both the Course and the Book of Exodus really reframe that, and true freedom is freedom from the ego. And once you realize you're living in this prison house, well, great, make your day. Do whatever you want in prison. It's still prison. It can't ever get, freedom within prison is still imprisonment. It's not really freedom, even if you think, well, hey, I can walk to that cell. I can visit my other cellmate. They let us out in the exercise yard. It's still prison. So by doing what you're talking about, Char, by, realizing, I won't make any decisions for myself today, and one day at a time, each day I do that. Therefore, that is true freedom, even though initially it sets up and feels to us like listening or asking what to do is enslavement. That's the ego's biggest trick, I think.
Yes, absolutely. But it's the opposite is true, because looking to a higher power and saying, I don't know all the facts. I don't have 1,000 years of history behind making this decision, and I can't know what's best for my future great-grandchildren. So you help me make this decision. And it's safe to say, and you as a doctor, when we take it upon ourselves and we rely on ourselves to make the best decisions for ourselves, our families, our children, when it goes wrong, who are you going to blame?
Yeah.
And you're right back in that cycle of self-loathing, self-doubt, I can't trust myself to make decisions, and now you're depressed, and now you're kicking the family dog. It's a mess. Don't do this. Ask every time what you should do, and then follow your instincts, and then the miracles will start to occur, because Spirit now sees that you're open. And whether it's a butterfly or a license plate in the car ahead of you, I play tricks in traffic. I ask questions, or I'm just mulling something around in my head, and all of a sudden all the cars move out of my way, and I have the whole street to myself, and I just smile, like, the path is clear, Charlotte, you're headed in the right direction. So, and we'll talk more about ways to recognize miracles in our next segment in the month of November, and that will be on the second Thursday, and I will go through my schedule and tell everybody the date. But please go if you would like to.
I think it would be the 14th.
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yes, the 14th.
Yes, so November,
of November
the 14th.
Thursday
we'll
at 3.
We'll continue the conversation.
Yes, and before you do, please take a moment to go to FromPlaguesToMiracles.com. This is the website for the book. It will give you a little more information, so excerpts. You can check that out if you'd like to study A Course in Miracles. Bob, you can give us the appropriate website for that. please.
Yeah, there are two websites. I mean, you can go to the Foundation for Inner Peace website, or you can go to, if you want more specific questions answered, go to Ken Wapnick's website, FACIM, F-A-C-I-M, I believe it would be FACIM.org, where there is the, by far and away, the largest archive of questions and answers that exists or probably ever will exist for, you know, resolving problems with the Course. Do we have time or are we out of time?
No, we have plenty of time. I set the timer over because I don't want to be cut off, and if you were very passionate about something you were saying, I wanted to give you that time.
Well, I just have one
we have 30
quote.
Minutes.
Okay. I doubt I'll take 30 minutes, but there was one quote.
No,
that
we don't
I,
want to
I
do
used.
That. 15 at one, the most we want to go because people are going to want to get on with their activities.
Exactly. You know, if you blocked out an hour, it's only fair. But there's a quote from A Course in Miracles regarding judgment that I excerpted and quoted in From Plagues to Miracles that I think goes right to what you were talking about asking. And I'm just going to read it. It says, in order to judge anything rightly, one would have to be fully aware of an inconceivably wide range of things, past, present, and to come. One would have to recognize in advance all the effects of his judgments on everyone and everything involved in them in any way, and one would have to be certain there is no distortion in his perception. Who is in a position to do this? Who, except in grandiose fantasies, would claim this for himself? So even when we feel absolutely confident that we're seeing something right and correct, no human being alive can know all of the implications, all the repercussions of even their smallest decision, whereas spirit can and does. And maybe a nice sort of, you know, teaser place to leave this is one of the points that A Course in Miracles makes, and it comes up a couple of times in the principles Principles of Miracles right at the beginning, is that you can't select the outcome of a miracle, and that you don't even know its purpose, that miracles are unconscious, ideally. We don't even know when we're giving miracles, and that because all mind is one and we're all linked, your moment of loving kindness sitting in the quiet of your own living room can be taken by Holy Spirit or by that Moses mind, can be taken around the planet and used in places and ways that you'll have absolutely no inkling of and don't need to know. But this is how we all break free. And so in the deepest, deepest sense, miracles aren't even about seeing things that we get for ourselves. Miracles, and this ties into what we talked about at the beginning, miracles are about becoming conduits for bringing spirit into this world of illusion. And when we're doing that, what we're going to find is, yeah, if we need a miracle, we trust that that will happen. But much more often, we simply get to a place of peace, and in so doing, Holy Spirit or the Moses mind by its nature will take that peace and that love and bring it to wherever it's needed, and we don't need to know that. That's not our job. And I think when we understand miracles from that perspective, now we're really doing God's work in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I see them every day. I can't not think that way anymore. I can't go back to the way it used to be. And it was like I was just living in the dark and walking through soup, wondering why life was hard and why. I had all these questions, why. And by the time A Course in Miracles found me, I was ready for the information. I probably would have resisted or disputed it until I was right at that point where I was of the mind that there has to be a better way. There has to be a better way. And there is, and this is it. Well, we appreciate everybody joining us today. Wasn't this fun, Bob?
This was great. This was great. And I think, you know, we'll certainly be talking about miracles more in future segments. I'd also like to talk about healing, certainly talk more about ego and the nature of slavery. You know, there are a lot of places we can go with this. And And so I hope that, you know, if you're listening to this not live and checking in, you know, at some other point, because all the programs are archived, that, you know, you'll think of some topics that you might want us to delve into, and you can send them to Shar, and then we can pick them up in some subsequent program.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you would like to recommend some subjects, or if you have any questions and you're feeling a little shy, and as you can see, you know, the conversation becomes very lively because we love this material so much and we have so much to offer respectively, especially when we're combining his Dr. Bob's book with the topic, which I always want to continue doing. We can never run out of material.
Sure.
But if you would like to make some suggestions or give us some feedback, the email address is spiritualinsightsradio@gmail.com, and we would welcome your comments and suggestions. I appreciate
Indeed.
That. Wow. Well, this is our first segment. Do tune in Thursday, November 14th at 3 p.m. for Dr. Bob's next program. And in the meantime, I need to start doing my own thing. The show has taken off so, quote-unquote, miraculously. I mean, look at the way we met.
Yes.
Wasn't that a miracle? I mean,
it's all miraculous.
I didn't.
You know, one of the things I said to you, Shar, just before today's program is, you know, I like to write and I like to work with people, but marketing a book is not my thing, and I need help in sort of, you know, just getting that word out. And you and other people have, you know, shown up in my life as true miracles. So I just, you know, offer so much in the way of blessings to you and through you to anyone listening and anyone in their world who might be in need of those.
Yes, and this the vision I had for the show has bigger than I could have comprehended, because I am actually connecting people. They're calling me the soul connector now, which is I will humbly accept that title. And just the miracles of working with the show and being pulled into such perfect unison with my purpose and my skills and my talents, and then it just opened a door, and just every day I meet someone new and they need help, and I say, I know this person, they need help, okay. And so it worked. So thank you very much for that. Well, I guess we'll wrap
thank
that
you.
Up here, and thank you everyone for tuning in, and as usual, God bless and be at peace. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.